Good afternoon and happy Saturday, folks. It's time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, in studio today with my producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy.
Hey, Sam.
How you doing, Daryl?
We're missing someone?
Well, we are.
Why?
Well, our executive director, John Schneider,
yes,
is down at the Allegheny County Warehouse.
Oh.
Where they do canvassing and accounting of mail-in and absentee ballots.
Oh, boy.
Because Bob Casey,
okay,
despite spending 30 years in government,
right,
he was the Auditor General at one point.
Yes, he was.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Can't count.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And doesn't realize that the gig is up, the game is over, whatever phrase you would like to use. But here we are 9 days after the general election. This morning, Dave McCormick is still up 26,462 votes. You know, these counties out there are just going through the remaining provisional,
sure,
ballots they have. Here's how desperate they are. Republicans have this boogeyman. You know, his name is Mark Elias. Mark Elias is a Democrat. Folks, I have air quotes here. Super lawyer who runs all around the country. You know, basically trying to steal elections, weaken election integrity laws and regulations and things of that nature. And they're down there. They are challenging. They want to count ballots that were cast by people who aren't registered to vote.
Now as you and I were talking about this, and we're talking about this, we're recording on Thursday, you said 9 days ago. When people listen to this, does this count take the weekends off when people listen to this on Saturday afternoon?
Actually, no. They, like, last Saturday, we had, right, workers at the warehouse.
Okay.
They were counting,
okay,
those and doing it, right?
I didn't know if it was a 9-to-5 proposition.
They did take Sunday and Veterans Day off.
Okay.
But so, yeah. So I said 9 business days. Folks, when you're listening to this, it will be 11 days past the election because you'll hear this on Saturday. And, so Democrats are challenging. They want to allow ballots. Again, folks, the defenders of democracy want to allow ballots cast by folks who aren't registered voters to count. They want to allow ballots cast by folks who aren't registered to vote in our county. Like someone's registered in Philadelphia County, but they just show up at a poll here and think they can vote to count, right? And for some reason, you know, this the race is close when you consider that there were almost 7 million votes cast. So it's triggered an automatic recount, although Casey could decline the recount.
Right.
But again, McCormick was involved in a recount back in 2022 when he lost in the Republican primary to Mehmet Oz. But in that whole recount statewide, only 48 votes changed.
Sure.
Okay. So this isn't 26 votes difference. This isn't 260 votes difference. This isn't 2,600 votes difference. We're talking about 26,000. The game is over. The gig is up. Bob Casey needs to recognize that. Josh Shapiro needs to say, why are we going to spend $1 million on an automatic recount when it's not going to change the results of the election? He needs to call Dave McCormick, congratulate him as the new senator for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and move on.
Now, what is John doing down there? We know he's down there. What is he overseeing things? Is he making sure, like, what are his duties down there? I'm assuming he's down there on behalf of the RCAC.
Yeah, what's happening down there is they have 3 or 4 tables set up,
sure,
where they're reviewing,
okay,
these provisional ballots.
Okay.
And what's happened is employees of the elections division have done research. So when they hand this ballot up, they're saying this person's not registered or this,
okay,
person didn't sign.
Okay.
There's no signature here.
And literally go,
right,
one by one by one.
They go one by one by one, and they go through these. So you have 3 or 4 tables doing that.
Okay.
Hopefully, by the end of the day, they will get through all of the provisionals.
Sure.
They may not be able to report. There was a dump this morning of votes, and then there'll be another one about 3:30.
Thursday morning, yeah.
But they should be able to get through the mix here at the end of the day, but they may have to report results maybe Friday morning as,
sure,
well, right? But anyway, so that's where we're at. But hey, so that's why John, a.k.a.
We'll miss him.
Calvin,
yeah,
Coolidge Schneider.
You get a chance to talk now.
A.k.a. Clint,
yeah,
Schneider. You know, the man of few words is not here in studio with us today. But hey.
He never shut up, that guy.
You know what? Oh, he does it, right? Jeez, oh, my gosh. If only we could say that about me.
Yeah.
Right? But hey, we don't have John in the studio today, but we have someone much, much better, okay?
Oh, agreed.
100%. And we have in studio with us today, Representative Natalie Mihalik, state representative from the 40th State Legislative District. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. I'm glad to be here with you and Daryl. I miss John. I don't know that I'm better than John. I'm certainly different.
I shouldn't have said that. John, I'm sorry.
I'm going to tell him.
He's going to know.
We'll end on more talkative.
Yes. More talkative then. There you go.
More talkative. Okay.
Yes, there you go.
For sure.
So, Natalie, congratulations on your reelection. Now, how many terms is this for you?
Thank you.
In the State House.
So I'm going to be sworn into my fourth term in January of 2025.
Okay.
So I'm pretty excited about that. And these two-year terms go by in the blink of an eye. So it's the fourth term, but it really seems like I just started doing this.
Wow. Four terms here. I mean, well, congratulations and kudos to you. Obviously, you are doing a good job for the people of your district because they continue to reelect you. So, you know, that's something that we should all appreciate. Now, you know, going back in January, what are your expectations for this new term? Because just like the last term, Democrats have a one-seat majority. And, you know, they refer to it as a humble majority the last time, while they ran roughshod over the Republicans in Harrisburg. I mean, you know, the committee breakdown of the number of Democrats to Republicans was outrageous, you know. And every time a Democrat either fled from the police, like the representative from Philadelphia, or, you know, took another job or resigned, the Democrats automatically broke and went out of session because they no longer had the majority. What are your expectations for this upcoming session in regards to the House in Harrisburg?
So, unfortunately, the Democrats were able to maintain their one-seat majority, and they do label it a humble majority. I think that Leader Bradford fails to understand the definition of humble, in my humble opinion. But unfortunately, I'm going to expect more of the same. We had our leadership elections, both the Democrats and House Republicans held leadership elections earlier this week, and by all accounts, the Democrats have elected almost identical to the slate of leaders they had last go-round. So it's going to be Leader Bradford then. He's going to be the one responsible for choosing which bills to run, when to run them. He'll be in charge of, you know, everything that's happening on the floor. So it's a precarious scenario to have to go back and know that the Democrats are, you know, in the same position. It's been a slog of a 2 years, I will say that, since, you know, the beginning of 2023. It's been difficult, and you're right. There have been resignations, arrests, this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, they make up excuses. We had the leaky roof, and we weren't in session for 4 months. We had the speaker debacle. So, funnily enough, when we were up in Harrisburg earlier this week for leadership elections, Mark Rossi, as you remember, was elected to speaker
initially, wouldn't
even call us back into session because there were those three Democratic resignations right off the bat. And they did a little portrait unveiling for him this week, which I found just terribly.
A portrait unveiling for a guy, like you said, a hot second.
They had a portrait done. And what I think they were doing was trying to meddle in our own leadership elections because, of course, we had, you know, some Republicans that ultimately voted for him thinking that maybe we could get voter ID, maybe we could get something done.
He'd committed to bringing to the floor the vote, which would have allowed the vote on constitutional amendments to be put on referendum.
That's right.
And he didn't allow the vote to take place.
And he pledged to be an independent speaker, which never panned out. So he got his portrait on the wall for screwing us over.
Do they have cameras in that hall? We might be able to draw a mustache on his picture or something like that.
I'm sure there are cameras everywhere in the Capitol.
Yeah, something snidely whiplash, you know, for somebody that, you know, that broke his word. That's terrible. But no, it's look, I saw a quote here, and the person who made it wasn't identified. It may have been the reporter, Stephen Caruso, who reported it, but, you know, Democrat referring to the state Senate, saying, well, you know, Republicans in the Senate thought that we were an aberration or something, and now maybe they'll, you know, respect or pay attention to us. And it's like, well, wait a minute, guys. Republicans came back with the same majority that they had, you know, and they 28 to 22. So they significantly outnumber the Democrats in that House. How about let's try working together instead of pushing all this progressive, crazy legislation, which, you know, I realize much of it was never intended to actually pass or become law, but it was about messaging. It was about trying to put you and others that were running for reelection into a corner, you know, so whether it was on life, whether it was on the Second Amendment, whatever it was, I mean, they were pushing bills again that had never had any chance whatsoever in passing, but they just wanted to pin you down. And then you saw in the commercials that were run in this past election, you know, how they took those and tried to use those in the commercials to make it look like you weren't supportive of the existing laws that are in place, you know, or how you were against somebody's constitutional rights. It was terrible, terrible.
It was terrible. And, you know, the Democrats, I will say this, they're very good at politicking. Not so much at governing, but they're very good at politicking. So I've had some conversations, you know, since the election with some friends on the other side of the aisle. I said, I get it. You guys were in the minority forever. You come back, you want to, you know, play some games, put us on blast for whatever. I said, the honeymoon is over. Like, it's time to govern now. We can't go back and play these games for two more years to the detriment of the people of Pennsylvania, because we're there to do a job and we're not doing it when there's all these timeouts taken. And then the days that we are there, it's political games.
Yeah. And you know, you talked about, I was joking, you brought up the roof, you know, well, at least we know the roof's been repaired. So we don't have to worry about that being an excuse as to why they can't meet. But, you know, again, I think Republicans, we had for all intents and purposes nationally a good election. You know, here in Pennsylvania, we had a good election night, you know, where not only did we elect Donald Trump and J.D. Vance as the next president and vice president of these United States, but we elected Dave McCormick, who took down the Casey dynasty, you know, to replace him and to actually give us an effective United States senator and even more exciting, one from Allegheny County.
Right.
Okay. We took all three row offices. You know, we took the critical seat, the attorney general's office, with Dave Sunday, the York County D.A., who was just on the show a couple weeks ago, winning election, you know, Tim DeFore being reelected, and Stacey Garrity winning her race with the highest vote total of any Republican elected in statewide history.
That's amazing.
You know, so, you know, we had a lot of great things happen. The state Senate, Devlin Robinson, run his reelection. Jen Dentini, who was an excellent candidate, was not successful in her race in the 45th. Senatorial district, but I couldn't be prouder of the race that she and our other candidates ran. But in all of our House incumbents, you know, won re-election and won it handily, you know, so it was good from that perspective. But I think what we're living with is the residual effects of the redistricting from 2020. And, you know, they had the redistricting commission. Tom Wolf refused to negotiate. It got thrown to the state Supreme Court. They appointed a special master who basically drew his own maps. And the fact that not a single incumbent in the not a single seat in the 203 seats in the state legislature changed hands. I think, folks, that should tell you that the redistricting was a failure and that they didn't create any competitive districts, but really trying to locks in, you know, a Democrat majority here, albeit very small, you know, for the time being. So, you know, hopefully we will be able to take back the House in 2026, and we'll work towards that. But yeah, it makes your job that much harder. And I know you had been working on a lot of great things, you know, when you were in the House hoping to get them passed. What do you anticipate trying to push forward, even if you have to do it? And there's nothing wrong with doing it with a member of the other side to show a bipartisan effort to solve problems on behalf of the people you represent.
Yeah, when you have a divided legislature, you have to work with the other side. And the other side has to work with you, right? We have a Senate Republican majority. So just yesterday, and I know this is going to air on Saturday, so earlier this week, I had a bill that passed the Senate finally. And I've been working on it for 5 years. I have a Democrat co-prime. We've been, you know, working on it for the last several years together. And it finally passed. It's headed to the governor's desk. So I say that because I do think there's a glimmer of hope. But you're not going to be able to do, you know, anything that's super partisan, controversial, without, you know, going right. across the aisle and coming and finding some common ground. And that's really, I think, what the people expect of us anyway, mm-hmm. despite what you see on TV and the political rhetoric that's out there. I think by and large, the expectations I know that have been placed on me from my constituents is you're not going there to shout and make Facebook videos and get yourself famous. You're there to do a job for the people of the 40th district and the people of Pennsylvania. And I do think that, you know, in this election cycle where we had this tremendous red wave and the failure of the House Republicans to actually obtain the majority is a true testament to our maps. And I think really a testament to the power of incumbency. Mm-hmm. I know I benefit from, you know, I've got a 6-year head start, right, on anybody that ran against me.
Right.
And that was true for, you know, some of these seats that had a much closer race than mine. Certainly the Cambria County seat that we had to watch for, you know,
Frank Burns seat, right. Several
days following the election, mm-hmm. because it was such a tight race. And of course, Cambria County had issues with their voting machines and everything else. But I think that it truly is a testament of the maps. And as incumbents, we're able to connect with our constituents in a way that nobody else on the ballot can. Not the Senate, you know, anybody running for statewide office, certainly not the president. We're part of the community, and we're sort of, you know, you kind of become the dumping ground for all of the problems that are out there. When people don't know where to turn, they come to their state rep. And I think that was reflected in this election.
You know, with the red wave that we had, I mean, we even won 2 congressional seats, taking 2 seats from Democrats out east. You know, it was disappointing that we weren't able to take back the House. I know that we spent a lot of money and effort on it, although not only a fraction of what the Democrats did. I think they raised like $14 million that they spent on their races while we were, you know, less than half of that.
Yeah, in some races we were outspent 4-1. And again, we were able to hold all of our incumbents. So it's the money is definitely a factor. The Democrats always have more money, seems like endless money to play with and run negative ads against us. It's really hard to unseat those incumbents, especially in these smaller state house districts.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh. Well, hey, folks, that's where we are today. Okay. And like I said, we're still waiting to try to wrap up. Dave McCormick won his race. He will be the next senator from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We just got to get, Bob Casey to realize that. And when he does, I can close the book on that. Maybe gets the much needed rest.
Maybe he doesn't have Dave's phone number. You want to get a hold of him and let him know? Here you go.
Well, you know what? Maybe he's looking in the wrong phone book. You know, I watched that campaign, and Bob Casey seems to think Dave lives in Connecticut and not realizing he lives here in Allegheny County and has for years, you know? So, but hopefully they'll figure this out and, you know, we'll be able to move forward. But it's interesting, like I said, that these folks who were the defenders of democracy, you know, until they unseated a sitting president and made him step down as their nominee and then appointed somebody else to run without a single vote, you know, then demanded people get behind her. And then after she loses and they lose, now here they are wanting to count votes that are illegal, you know, and willing to file court challenges to count them in an act of desperation to try to hold on to their seat. And like, I don't know, like I said, you know, Bob Casey won election because of the good name of his father, the original Robert Casey, who was a governor here in Pennsylvania. And Bob has been in office for 30 plus years. You know, and we thank him for his service. But in 18 years in the Senate, you know, I defy anybody to tell me, name a single signature piece of legislation that Mr. Casey passed that has made a difference in the lives of the average Pennsylvanians.
I have no idea.
I questioned media that, never gotten an answer. You know, so that tells you about how effective he is. Dave McCormick is a real leader. Here's a guy who's excelled at everything he's ever done. I mean, from early life as a high school athlete, excelled in wrestling, football, and academics, goes to West Point, becomes the captain of his wrestling team, goes to the Army, fights in Desert Storm, where he was in the 82nd Airborne as a Ranger, wins a Bronze Star, comes back to Pittsburgh, goes to work at McKinsey and Company, and then becomes the president of Free Markets, and took and built that company, creating jobs, 600 jobs here, until they sold that for $500 million to a company called Ariba. Ariba is now part of the global behemoth software company for SAP. And then he went to work in the Treasury Department, or Commerce first, then the Treasury Department, where he was the Deputy Undersecretary for Treasury. He helped lead the international response, in the Great Recession, the international response, and then goes to lead, become the CEO of the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates. So here's a guy that's been, he's the first one that tells you, he's exceeded his wildest dreams from a success perspective, but cares about the future of this country. He has six daughters, cares about are they going to have the same American dream or the opportunities he has, and has dedicated his life to ensuring and providing that the rest of these kids can. So he's doing a phenomenal job, and he's down in Washington right now, was going through the orientation. Chuck Schumer was trying to block that.
Yeah.
You call that?
I'm glad that they reversed course on that, because that is completely uncalled for. And Dave's resume speaks for itself. And I think going beyond that, if you meet him, you get to know him, he's just a genuine person. And I think we're going to see that play out in his term, and we're excited to have him and looking forward to seeing him get something done in a way that Senator Casey just could not.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward. I know that Dave will fight for us, and I know, when Senator Toomey decided not to run for reelection, and anybody that has ever interacted or met Senator Pat Toomey understands what an influential, but what an incredibly intelligent and knowledgeable person he was in regards to finance and geopolitics and things of that nature. Dave McCormick brings that same type of acumen and intelligence to the table, and that's something that we have been sorely lacking here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And Dave is not afraid to take a stand and to demonstrate moral clarity on issues. So I'm very excited to see him in his position lead, and excited about what the next 4 years brings. But, folks, the political or your elected officials who live closest to you, who have the greatest effect on your life, and that's many of your local officials who on the school board or your municipal level here at the county level, and then also your state representatives. These are the folks that represent on average 65,000 of you and in the districts. These are the people that, as Natalie said earlier, that you go to when you have questions or concerns or problems. So very excited about what the future holds here. We just got to take back the House so we can get some real things done in Harrisburg, even with Josh Shapiro as governor.
That is the one missing puzzle piece. I mean, it was a great night overall.
Yes.
And we weren't quite sure how it was going to shake out with the Cambria County seat, but I think there is hope for the future. I think that, the country is a 65% of voters don't think the country is on the right track. And that was, I think, a reflection of Tuesday's results. And I think that's something that, we ought to be looking at in the State House in terms of, where can we pick up seats? Where are those districts that feel that way? And maybe to a greater extent, maybe it's 75% there, and kind of steering them away from, maybe some of the Democrats in those seats, because you're right, and we could get something done. We can pass it in the Senate, and we can work with the governor's office to serve the people of Pennsylvania in a way that it's so difficult in divided government.
That bill that you talked about that you got passed that went to the governor's desk, what bill was that? What was that about?
So that was House Bill 1210, and it's a small change to our PFA laws, and this allows for—
Is this a domestic animal? Was it Senate Bill 1810 then? It went along with that, or?
So there was a Senate companion bill that was introduced. It was never passed. We did it in the House.
Okay.
We passed it almost 2 years ago, and it sat in Senate Judiciary for 20 months or something like that, and only at this 11th hour were we able to get it done. We had some input from not only Senator Robinson, but Senator Laughlin up in Erie. They were fans of the bill and helped us shepherd it through the Senate. But this allows, if you're looking at domestic violence cases where there are animals present in the home, there's a 90% likelihood that the animal is also being abused.
Yes.
Beyond that, it's a barrier for victims to actually leave, because they fear, well, what's going to happen, to my dog, to my cat, to whatever. And it's been their companion the whole time they've been enduring this abuse. So we wanted to remove that burden. It shouldn't be the reason that somebody stays in an abusive situation. And we want to make sure that the advocates, the courts that are hearing these cases, they have the tools that they need to provide for that pet to go along with the victim if they're willing to actually leave the situation, which is huge. So it's a small change to the law. I think it has big effects for, you know, victims statewide. There are many other states that have implemented laws like this. So we were really happy. I've been working, like I said, for a number of years with Humane Society, some advocacy groups here in Pittsburgh, domestic violence shelters. We've been looking to put money into some of these domestic violence shelters to actually be able to house not only the victims, but their pets as well, so they have someplace safe to go.
Very pleased to hear that. I was just at Humane Action Pittsburgh's gala last Thursday, and I talked to them about how I might possibly be able to help, and you guys were reading my mind. Thank you so much. Folks, we're going to get right back, and we're going to talk to Natalie right after the break here, but we have to take a break to pay the bills. Here we are, Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. Folks, welcome back to the Elephant in the Room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. We're here joined in studio again by State Representative Natalie Mihalik of the 40th Legislative District here. And Natalie, you want to tell the folks, the listeners here who aren't familiar with you or your district, what municipalities your district is made up of?
Yeah, so I represent parts of Allegheny and Washington counties. I have all of Bethel Park, which is about 33,000 residents. I've got a little bit of Upper St. Clair. Used to have all of it, and then in redistricting that shifted. And then I represent Peters Township, located in Washington County. So it's the South Hills.
Well, you have a good sense of, you know, the region there because you cross county lines, you know. And what are the big issues, you know, in your district, you know, today?
So most of it's very localized. I find it's pretty rare that, you know, constituents come up to you in Target or walking into the office that they have this major statewide issue that they're, you know, looking for a piece of legislation. It's normally, hey, we have, you know, this baseball field going in and we're trying to get some funding for it. Is there anything that the state can do? Or we've got this, you know, situation where DEP has weighed in and now it's going to cost the township all kinds of money. Is there, you know, anything you can do? Can you talk to them? Can you help us find this money? It's usually something very localized. I would say, you know, all these commercials that we've just endured for the last however many months, some of these big ticket items, you're really not hearing that every day from constituents, at least not in my office.
Well, that's good to know. You know, I'll tell you, boy, what will the next 4 years hold? You know, folks, as you're listening to our show here, you know, you're seeing play across your television screen here, you know, Freudian slip, I guess. And I'm referring to the Democrats' cries when they see some of the cabinet picks that Donald Trump is making here, you know, whether it be Tulsi Gabbard to head the office or to be the director of national intelligence, Matt Gaetz is attorney general, and that's certainly out of left field. And we'll see where that ends up. You know, Pete Hegseth to lead the Department of Defense. And Pete is taking a lot of heat. But I think what President Trump is looking for are folks that are going to shake up the way things are being done. And I know Pete, I first met Pete Hegseth probably might have been 12, 13 years ago when he came to town here. He was actually married. His first marriage, I think, was to a woman from Pittsburgh. But he came to town here representing Concerned Veterans of America. He was here with Sean Parnell, who was also working with Concerned Veterans of America, because they were trying to push a bill, which ultimately did become law, and I believe was signed by President Obama, you know, to help veterans, you know, get better health care and things of that nature. But very dynamic, very impressive, you know, individual, very dynamic. He's written books, but his main focus is on, you know, he sees what's happening in D.C. He sees where the Department of Defense, they're talking about DEI. You know, they're putting money in there for abortions or for transgender surgeries and things like that. They're wasting a lot of money on biofuels. They're looking at putting solar panels on tanks. I mean, just incredibly silly stuff. Instead of doing things that would increase the lethality, you know, of our service members to allow us to take and go out to defend this country and defeat our enemies. And you know, I am a veteran of the Marine Corps. And Natalie, you know, you're a veteran of the United States Navy. You know, what do you think about, you know, what as far as the Department of Defense and our military, and I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but what do you think about some of the things that we may perhaps need or what isn't being done?
So I think this election was a rejection of a lot of these woke policies that you see not only in the military but in the private sector mm-hmm. as well. I didn't know much about Pete until a few days ago when he became part of this national conversation. And I think what he has in common with some of these other cabinet choices is you hit the nail on the head. These are people that are going to shake things up. And I think that's what America is thirsty for right now, somebody to do things a little bit differently. Some of these policies that are, you know, we're, you know, catering to 10 people across the country.
Right.
What do we actually need to have a fit and ready military? This is the greatest, you know, military across the globe. And we're actually having trouble finding recruits these days. And it leads me into my favorite potential cabinet pick. He hasn't been named to anything yet, but that's RFK Jr. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you know about him. I know that a lot of people were introduced to him when he bowed out of his own presidential mm-hmm. race and endorsed President-elect Trump. But this Make America Healthy Again is actually something I've been working on in the state legislature in terms of getting rid of some of these toxic garbage ingredients that have no place in our food. We have companies, mostly U.S.-based companies, that make inferior products for their U.S.-based customers.
Yeah, they don't sell those in Europe, right?
They don't sell them in Europe. They don't sell them in Canada, Australia, Japan, China. Nowhere else on earth are people ingesting the ingredients that we're ingesting here. And one of the downstream results is having a military that can't recruit candidates because they're unhealthy, overweight, this, that, and the other thing. We've got this, you know, nation full of people walking around with all these chronic diseases.
Illnesses, yes.
$4.4 trillion every year spent on healthcare. And 80% of that, Sam, is on preventable chronic diseases.
Oh, my.
$4.4 trillion. Come on. So I think RFK is on to something. I think that, you know, his work with the Children's Defense Fund over the last 30 years has really given him the insights and some of those relationships with the scientists. And he's criticized all the time, like, mm-hmm. oh, this is not based in science. Well, those are coming from food industry types that don't want to see anything change because it will eventually affect their bottom line. If they've got to change their ingredients, change their recipes, change their machinery, God forbid they do anything to actually benefit the American people other than making a profit off of poisoning us and poisoning our children.
Well, and you see that everywhere. We see it in the climate debate, right? You see all these folks coming out and, you know, talking about, you know, climate change and how it's a terrible thing and how it's going to, you know, it's existential threat. And then you start looking, you find out that they all receive money, you know,
follow
from the government
money.
Or from these grants, right?
So follow
the money. And to your point about RFK, you're talking about big pharma and big ag, you know, why are they doing this? And if, you know, we talked about the food pyramid and everything that the government pushed. I mean, and you know, I'm an older guy, so I've seen this thing come full circle, but do you remember when butter was bad? And you're supposed to use margarine or monos. Yes, yes.
What is the current verdict on eggs?
And then you come back and now this stuff is good.
Now it's in style.
Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of crazy. But yeah, no, listen, I'm looking forward to it. And this cycle was so incredible. Elon Musk, you know, love him or hate him, I love him, okay? Because the guy put $44 billion of his own money up to buy Twitter because he believed that we had to have a town square, albeit digital, but where folks could express freely, you know, their thoughts and speech. And, you know, it gets dangerous when a government seeks to try to take and suppress that, even when they claim it's because they want to suppress hate speech or they want to suppress disinformation or misinformation. But as we've seen, you know, in this COVID debate, since COVID came upon us in 2020, so much of the information that the government put out itself was, in fact, disinformation or misinformation, you know. And so I believe that the more speech, the better. You know, that if someone has something that I don't like what they say and I don't agree with it, but the fact that they should have the ability to say it and allow people to debate it, you know, let the best ideas, you know, win instead of trying to take and manage them. Elon Musk stood up for that. The Biden administration tried to censor. And I believe that Kamala Harris and her crew would have taken it even further And that's why this is a big win for everyone that believes in freedom and free speech.
And I think democracy only functions when we're enjoying those freedoms to their fullest extent, the freedom of speech, free press. We do not need more government regulation. I think that's probably, you know, the basis of why you and I signed up for the Republican Party way back when. And I think that, you know, that the decisions that he was making with regard to Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't do it myself because I can't figure it out. But I think that it's just a true testament to, you know, his allegiance to free speech.
Yes, it's so I appreciate that. And the fact, I had the opportunity to go and see him. He did a town hall here in Pittsburgh. It was at McKee's Rocks. So I went down and saw him. And I mean, the guy was just so, seemed honest. He said, look, I don't care about politics. I'm a technologist. You know, he goes, but there's some things that I believe we absolutely have to have. And that's free speech. You know, and when you look at how we talk about the weaponization of government, and that was a big theme that President Trump used. But not only was Trump persecuted by government in many ways here with this lawfare, but so was Elon Musk and his companies. They were taking and doing the investigations of his companies. Heck, the Department of Justice is suing SpaceX because they didn't give jobs to illegal immigrants, you know, on SpaceX, and they want them to pay them back, you know, back wages. I mean, just like the folks, just like Casey's lawyers, trying to count votes cast by people who aren't registered to vote. This is insane, and I believe that's a big reason why Democrats were rejected at the polls, you know, last Tuesday. I mean, men and women's sports. Look at, they're eating their own. Congressman Seth Moulton, a Marine veteran who's a Democrat in Congress from Massachusetts, is being attacked because he said that he didn't want his daughters to be run over on a playing field, you know, by males or, you know, or players that used to be men, okay, in sports. And he said he feels that way, but he's afraid to say it as a Democrat because his party will cancel him.
Oh, sure.
And that's what they're trying to do.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. I mean, that has never made any sense to me. And we've taken steps in the state house over the years to make sure that our Pennsylvania students, our girls that are playing sports, they're not being bowled over by, mm-hmm. you know, boys. I have two daughters. I have a son. They play very differently, very differently. We have field hockey. It's not really co-ed, but they have trouble filling spots because it's really not that popular of a sport. And I get very nervous for, you know, my 13-year-old daughter out there playing this sport with boys running around, and you know they've got this mm-hmm. sticks and they're running into each other, and it does make you nervous on the sidelines. And it's, you know, a totally different situation where it's, they expect it. They know they're playing against boys there. When you're not expecting it and you have just a different genetic makeup, I mean, it's just, it's crazy that we even have to have these conversations.
Look, you've seen girls who are basically paralyzed right now because, you know, a male spiked the ball on them in a volleyball game. Okay. I mean, these just, you know, these are terrible, terrible things that have taken place. And, you know, you can feel compassion for somebody so confused, whether suffering from gender dysphoria, whatever the case may be, you know, or, and I don't, you know, your opinions and mine may differ on the trans issue. But, you know, when we talk about safety, I mean, I know when I was growing up, you know, even in just boys, if you played football, if you weighed more than X, you weren't allowed to be on the team.
Correct.
And it was all about safety for the other players, right? But yet here we have. You know, men competing against women in some of these sort of contact sports. And then I also worry about, you talked about your two daughters. I worry about their opportunities for scholarships or championships or things of this nature, just recognition that they can get through competition, but that might get stolen, you know, by somebody that's, you know, a male, right? It's just, it defies the whole fundamental idea of fairness.
It defies logic. You
know, yes, well.
Truly. Truly. And this isn't to say that, you know, that those individuals that are, you know, experiencing these different issues, like I'm not putting them down at all. And I think that's what gets misconstrued. That's probably a large part why this senator doesn't want to speak out, because then you're seen as anti-trans, you're seen as anti-gay, you're seen as, you know, whatever the label is. But it is simply a safety issue, plain and simple.
Yes, exactly. And that's how we have to look at it. It's just, but it is what it is. You talked about defying logic. You know, that's the Democratic platform. You know, defies logic, it doesn't make sense, you know, to a large extent. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where we go from here. Now, you know, what's next for you? I mean, you don't have a raise, but like you said, you run every 2 years. Okay. If someone's heard you on this show and said, my gosh, I really like Natalie. I'm glad that she was reelected. I'd like to help her the next time that goes around. How would folks reach out to you, folks in your district, or somebody that might want to volunteer the next time you're up, or to give you money? How would they go about reaching you?
Sure. I mean, it depends if it's campaign side, if they have legislative questions. We keep all those things very separate. My website is nataliemihalik.com, and there's a button on there to volunteer or to contact me. And I get those messages personally. If you have, you know, something to say, some input, it's info@nataliemihalik.com, I think is the actual email address. But I answer all of those personally. And look, we all need help. And it's not just in those election years. It might be, you know, something we're doing in the district. We're holding a big veterans breakfast next Friday, and you know, we get volunteers for that. I think we have the Rotary Club coming to assist us in just getting, you know, getting our veterans situated and making sure everything's taken care of for them. But there are always opportunities throughout the year to get involved. And really involved in your political party. I mean, you can make such an impact being on a Republican committee, making your calls, taking care of your neighborhood, taking care of your backyard. When you get to know all of your neighbors and you know which ones you can count on to put a sign in the yard and which ones you can count on to maybe place 20 or 30 calls if it gets toward the end of voting time on election day and you see that person hasn't voted. There are so many ways that you can be impactful. One of the things that we did for this past campaign was we reached out to every low propensity voter in the 40th district, every single one, handwritten letter, every single one. Low propensity, if you're not right in the political speak, is just those people that don't turn out every time. Yep. They did it for whatever reason. They might show up in presidential years. They might show up, you know, here and there in a midterm, but they're not voting in every single election. They're not categorized as super voters. And we reached out to them and we said, look, and this was based off of some of the numbers that Joe Rocky put up in Allegheny County, mm-hmm. with 11% more of you coming out to vote, we're not looking at a 46% tax hike in Allegheny right. County. It's 11% more. That's a small number, especially yep. in terms of a state house district. And I think that we had a tremendous success in reaching those voters, and just maybe something stuck, maybe something's sunk in, but our turnout was just, you know, across mm-hmm. the board. Then I know the numbers in my district. I mean, we had almost 100% at some of these polling locations. You got to 6:30, 7 o'clock on election day, and there was nobody left. There was nobody left right. to vote because everybody had come out and cast their vote, which was a pretty incredible thing to witness.
And that is an incredible thing, but it's also something that's very welcome. You know, and you know, I would say here, I think, you know, I've been preaching the use of the mail-in and absentee ballots for 4 years since 2020 and asking people to use them. And Republicans this election used them to an extent not at a level not reached since 2020. And that means all these folks are going to get automatically an application next year to ask if you want a mail-in or absentee ballot. I would highly urge you to accept that and to respond that you do want one, because, you know, now you were just talking about people getting involved in their neighborhood, in their district, right? We have all the municipal races next year. So your local board of supervisors or commissioners, you know, your school board, these races are all coming up next year. There'll be judicial races here in Allegheny County. Do you want to take an elect, or by not voting, do you want to allow them to elect judges like Xander Orenstein, who will allow, you know, folks to go free? And, you know, we saw what a tragic circumstance that turned into when someone that he had let go three after assaulting somebody, felony robbery in Point State Park in 2023, murder is accused of murdering, you know, a Pennsylvania State Police liquor enforcement officer here out in Moon Township. So it's important that you continue to do this, because what happens is Democrats do respond. They do take and vote by mail, even in the off year of elections. And that means that even though Republicans turn out more on election day at the poll, the fact is when Democrats can start the day with 6,000 and 7,000 vote advantages because of the mail-in ballots, it makes it difficult for us to overcome. You know, folks, you know, we've suffered. We've had a tough 3 years, the past four years. We've had it tough, and we're experiencing a little bit of wind at our back here with the results that we had on Tuesday. And winning begets winning. It's like a football program. You know, when you're a winning program, better players will want to go there and to attend school there. Well, same thing here in politics. Now that we're winning, more and more people will want to get involved, but we need to keep winning. Let's not take a step backwards. Let's try to increase the number of people voting by mail or absentee, as well as people going out to the polls. You know, we need to take and win back the state house. But in the interim, we got to take back our school boards. We got to stop the teaching of critical race theory, DEI, or, you know, allowing, you know, boys in girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. I mean, folks, this has to stop. And you can make it stop by voting. So please, you know, get involved here. Respond to those applications when they come out next January. Or, you know, if you have any questions, you want to get involved in your local committee, you know, send a message to us at Allegheny.gop. That's Allegheny.gop. And we'll put you in touch with the chairperson, you know, for your local committee. And you can go from there. But, you know, again, I can't thank everybody enough that did come out to vote, as well as all of those who volunteered and worked and put forth so much effort over the past, not just 1 year, but the past 3 years to help make the results that we saw on Tuesday happen. So thank you.
And it doesn't stop there. You said something earlier about we won, but we want to keep winning. And I think one of the ways to do that is to expand our tent. Yes, we won, and we won decisively, but we can't take anything for granted. Now's the time to look beyond the Republican Party, to look beyond those that, you know, pulled the lever for Republicans up and down the ticket, and follow, you know, along with what President Trump said and calling for unity. I mean, this country is divided. There's no doubt about it. And I think now's the time to unify. We're all Americans at the end of the day. I know I always long for that sense of patriotism that the country experienced in the wake of 9/11.
Yep.
And I feel that we've gotten so, so far away from that. And I'm not looking for another tragedy to occur on American soil. That's not it at all. But if we can get back to that feeling of solidarity, we're Americans first. And I think that sending that message out there and following in what President Trump is saying, that we have the opportunity to expand the tent, and then we can keep winning. Because when we win, I think the people of Pennsylvania and the American people win.
Yeah, no, great point, Natalie, and I couldn't agree more. You know, on social media, I was a cheerleader for our team, and I went out there and did everything I could to get our candidates elected. But once we won, I didn't feel the need to gloat. And that's because, you know, now the hard work starts. It's time to govern. So, you know, you didn't see any messages from me, you know, making fun of, you know, my opponents from the other side or the folks that would come at me on X and things of that nature, because we won. What's the point? The point is now we have to govern and move forward, and you get unity by being humble and magnanimous. Be magnanimous in victory, okay? And also understand, as Natalie said, we're a Big Ten party. Politics is a game of addition. You win by getting more folks into your tent than chasing them out. We don't need purity tests. I understand you may not agree with someone on 100% of the things, maybe not on 80%, but somebody that agrees with us 70 or 80% of the time, they're a friend and an ally, not a 20 or 30% traitor, okay? We need to stop fighting with each other and take and move forward here, try to bring this country together, or as many of the folks as we can, and then move forward in governing. And Natalie, we have just a couple of minutes left. What would you like to say to our listeners?
No, I love that. And I think that you were playing off an old Ronald Reagan quote, and I love the sentiment so much. And you're right. There's just no point in gloating. It's classless. It's not the right thing to do. If you're looking at a neighbor, maybe they had the opposite signs up that you had in your yard. Now's the time to go over and talk about issues. Have those conversations face to face. We talked about Twitter earlier, and that's great for the massive exchange of ideas that it enables us to have. But there's something to be said for those one-on-one conversations. There's something to be said about talking to your neighbors and having these difficult conversations and having them in a civil way. We're trying to, you know, get our kids used to that, talking about things that are uncomfortable, talking about things that we don't necessarily agree on. And I'm hopeful that we can get back to that place where we can have those conversations. You're not the enemy. Maybe we agree on even more than we thought we did. It's just you have to find out. You have to be able to reach across the aisle or, you know, go across the street to your neighbor's house and have those conversations. And I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to do that moving forward.
Well, it's also important here as we get ready for the holidays, you know, with Thanksgiving coming up in a couple of weeks, Christmas next month, you know, and you see these stories on social media and things of that nature where what we have happening are people that are saying that they won't go to dinner, they won't attend a family dinner or have family over because of the way they voted. And folks, that is absolutely the wrong way to be. And that's why I say, listen, let's be magnanimous in victory. We don't have to lord it over anybody. And for the folks who are on the other side who lost, folks, it was an election, okay? Folks on our side, we lost the election 4 years ago, and most of us got over it, right? And we just worked to win, you know, this time here. Let's try doing the same thing. Natalie, as always, when we get started talking, we run out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Elephant in the Room today. Really do appreciate it. Wish you the very best of luck in Harrisburg and hopefully, you know, smooth sailing, you know, for that sailor there.
Right.
Calm seas, right?
I really appreciate it, Sam. And thank you, Daryl, for having us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And keep up the good work. If you don't know, Sam DeMarco is the hardest working person in Allegheny County politics. I truly believe that. So thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for the kind words, Natalie. Folks, until next week, this is Sam DeMarco signing off for the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Have a great weekend.